Lady Grizzly basketball with an 8-point lead. Luong, dribble drive into the lane, all the way to the rack, and scores on Callie Kayser. Selena Luong has 7, matching her season high, and Rock Hills leads by 10, 44-34. Cross half court, this is Reiner with it. Out of the top of the key, left side, Beffert, wide open, 3. Put it on the board for Brooke Beffert. Osborne regains the lead by 2, 48-46, after they trailed by 10 at one point in the quarter.
Last night, a high-scoring girls' sub-state basketball game in the sub-state semifinals up at Washington County. Osborne prevailing by a final score of 70-58. I saw Dusty's update on social media, and I was like, 50-46 at the end of three. I'm like, dear Lord, that's like a game and a half for teams that I cover. I mean, that's like maybe two games for in some situations. I mean, I've had games this year where teams haven't got to 30 or 35 or 40, and so, there have been a few games where somebody haven't got to 20, and 50-46, and I'm like, at the end of the third, and then there's not too many girls. Teams are putting up 70 points, but Osborne did it last night, and I'll still recap that coming up in a moment here. Actually, we'll just hand it over to Dusty, and he can talk about his games, and then Jason with his game last night that wasn't very close, as we kind of been anticipated, and then we'll look ahead to the night's games.
Yeah, it was a fun game to call. Rock Hills, as you heard there at the outset, got out to a 10-point lead at one point in the third quarter. It was kind of funny when I'm looking at it, because it was 18-14 Osborne after the first quarter, and Rock Hills outscored them 20-12 in the second quarter, and then third quarter comes around, and then Rock Hills, like you said, got the 10-point lead, but Osborne fought back and had a big run at the end of the quarter, 16-2, and after Rock Hills outscored Osborne 20-12 in the second quarter, Osborne outscored Rock Hills 20-12 in the third quarter, and then the fourth quarter, Osborne outscored Rock Hills 20-12.
Okay.
3 straight quarters with a 20-12 score. I've seen some weird things this year. Like Osborne boys had a game earlier this year. They scored 17 points in every quarter that I did.
That's right.
And this has been kind of some anomalies and some weird things happen. But Osborne obviously had a really good second half. And after getting down by 10, 44-34, they outscored Rock Hills the rest of the way, 36-14. Probably much similar to the game that Jason did there about a week and a half ago, where Rock Hills got a lead and then Osborne was able to kind of put a run together and then kind of pull away at the end. They win this one by 12. They won a week and a half ago by 7. But Osborne picking up that victory against 70-58. The final score, Trinity Luters was the co-athlete of the game from SNS Drug and Home Health in Beloit with 26 points. 19th time this year she's been in double figures and had a big fourth quarter with 9 points and helping create more separation again as they led by just 4. Osborne did at the end of the third at 50-46. So again, 26 there for Trinity Luters. Gracie Reiner finished with 17, 7 in the second half, and also in double figures. Grace William had 16 for Osborne. They're now 20-2. The block of the game from H&R Block and Beloit went to Brooke Beffert in that win for the Lady Dogs. And Osborne's now 11-0 all time against Rock Hills. Rock Hills didn't go down without a fight. This was their second highest scoring total of the season after having their highest was 76 there Friday night against Lakeside last Friday. They had 58 here against Osborne, and again, some balanced scoring there for Rock Hills. Lauren Welchel did lead the way with 24 points, went 10 of 20 from the floor, and Bethany Simulink, the freshman, added 12, including 7 in the second quarter, and 9 points for Danica Frost, our athlete of the week from this past week for ncksports.com. Rock Hills finishes their year at 11-11, and connects in the game, kind of game, teleporting cables and assists from Bethany Simulink to Danica Frost in the first quarter. And the block of the game, the block of the game was Brooke Beffert, as we mentioned, for Osborne. So again, Rock Hills at 11-11. Osborne with the win, moving to 20-2, and they move on to the championship game where they will take on Frankfort coming up tomorrow night there, and we'll have that game for you from Washington. So, again, Osborne-Frankfort will be for the championship. Frankfort winning by 8 over Clifton Clyde in the other semifinal last night there in Washington. So that's a recap of how things went in my game. Jason was at Tescott.
Yeah. St. John's Tipton dominated that one over Tescott. Jumped out to an 18-2 first quarter advantage. Really, the defense, 18 points is a good number, but 2 is a little bit better number when you think of the defense. And man, they just make things tough for guards, and if you don't have a second or even third ball handler, that's what St. John's Tipton will kind of feast on. They make that first guard turn 2 or 3 times, and sometimes when they turn back, there's a double team waiting for them, and that's what they got him started, three or four easy layups that way. And like I said, 18-2 after one quarter of play, 30-7. They hit some three-pointers in the middle quarters as well. Carly Brummer hit four of them, en route to 22 points. Ella Wiles added 12. Obviously the defense started it with that 30-7 first half advantage.
All right, so St. John's Tipton moves on.
Yeah, they'll play Thunder Ridge, who won last night over Northern Valley, 51-25.
Thunder Ridge looked good. As I watched that one, they looked really good.
Impressed by the score, anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Thunder Ridge, Northern Valley, Thunder Ridge wins that one 51-25. So that'll be the championship game tomorrow night, St. John's Tipton and Thunder Ridge there at 5:30 in Tescott. Once we have all the boys' games figured out, we'll know what our full schedule is for tomorrow's high school sports. We have high school boys coming up tonight. Before we get to that, we do have a couple other scores from last night in the immediate area. 1A Division I girls at Gossel, 7 Lucas beating Rural Vista, 54-47. The Lady Mustangs actually trailed 10-0, but came back and ended up with the win. They scored, I think they outscored them 10-2. I didn't have that down, but I think it was 45 all at one point there in the fourth. Sylvan Lucas winning it 54, so been 9-2, 54-47 the final score there. Sylvan Lucas with the win. They'll move on to play Canton Galvin, the championship. Canton Galvin knocked off number one seed Elyria Christian 51-38, so that'll be in Gossel tomorrow for the Sylvan Lucas girls. Phillipsburg girls won over Norton 66-47 in 3A. Southeast of Saline apparently had some bus problems getting to the game, but they won 48-34 over Hoisington, so it'll be Phillipsburg and Southeast of Saline girls in the championship game coming up tomorrow night in Class 3A in Russell. Sacred Heart boys also picking up a win last night to move to the 2A championship game in Hillsboro. They won, Sacred Heart did 58-45 over Chase County. Sacred Heart will play Bennington in the championship game tomorrow. All right, moving on to high school hoops tonight. We have games on Kitty Country 94 and Z96 Point Through the Lake. I'll talk about my games first, if that works. Okay. Or if you want me to start with Kitty Country 94, doesn't matter. Just either go. Way. So we'll go with the Washington County sub-state, since I'm kind of on my mind. The Lakeside Knights, Clifton Clyde Eagles will play the second game. First game is Osborne against Blue Valley here tonight in Washington as the 1A Division I sub-state rolls on in the semifinals. Osborne, the number two seed on the boys' side at 19-4, facing number three seed Blue Valley Randolph, who's 17-4. Osborne, again, 19-2, 17-4 Blue Valley. Osborne coach Jamie Walters knows that the Rams have faced a pretty tough schedule this year, and they'll be a tough out.
They like to transition, get up and down the court. They got a couple kids. One can really shoot. The other one's just a good player, good driver, good finisher inside. You know, so we're going to have to try to limit possessions, try to make it a half-court game. And these kind of games, we got to control the tempo, because they get out and run, and they can really catch fire and really score the ball.
Yeah, they got two guys like Coach Walters was talking about. Ryan Stevens averaging 15 points a game, and Jalen Pleasant averages 14, a couple guys there. And then Johnny Hamill's obviously been the leader for Osborne this year, averaging nearly 20 a game here this season. So, again, Osborne and Blue Valley, our first game of the evening on Z96.3 and KittyCountry94.com, pregame at 5:50 and tip-off at 6 o'clock. And then following that here tonight will be the Lakeside boys against Clifton Clyde, as Drew Dusky, the coach of the Knights, knows Clifton Clyde, who comes in at 19-2, is the number one seed. Will be a challenge for his squad here this evening for sure.
Yeah, they got a good post player. He's about 6'4", and you know, we don't have anybody, you know, especially my starters are that big that you know, can contest with that. So that's going to be, you know, something that might give us fits. And when you watch film on them, you know, I know we played some quick teams in our league this year, but they look about, you know, the quickest team that I've seen so far. You know, they're up in your face playing defense, and they get after you so well. And sometimes we've struggled this year of taking care of the ball when people get up and press us.
So again, that was Drew Dusky, coach of the Lakeside Knights. Lakeside coming in at 12-10. They're the number four seed in this sub-state. Again, they'll have a big challenge. Clifton Clyde has four guys that average double figures. The top is at 13 a game, and the bottom of their double figure score is at 11.5. Trent Long averaging 13. Coy Steinbrock, Jack Scutchney, and Seth LeClaire, some names to keep an eye on here tonight, or an ear open for anyway, for Clifton Clyde here this evening. It'll be a tough game for Lakeside. That'll be around 7:30 tonight in Washington on Z96.3 The Lake. So the call from both of those games here tonight on Z96.3.
All right, a doubleheader on Katy Country 94 from two different sites. The first game up on the docket tonight at 5:50 pregame, it's Norton versus Beloit in the 3A boys substate semifinals from Russell on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Live video stream at ncksports.com. We'll follow that up with St. John's Tipton versus Thunder Ridge, which should be a great showdown in Tescott in the 1A boys substate semifinals that Jason and I have the call of tonight. And that game will We will join that game in progress or pick it up just in time or maybe in plenty of time, just depending how long the Beloit-Norton game goes tonight out at Russell. So we start there. Ryan Eilert, head coach of the Beloit Trojan Boys, who are now 16-5 after starting the season 0-3. Blew out Hoisington 74-40 on Tuesday. Balanced scoring attack, four starters in double figures, a fifth with 9 points. Take on a Norton team that, when you look at their schedule, it doesn't look super tough, although they did play Colby twice. They lost to Colby twice. Beloit beat Colby in the Orange and Black Classic, if you want a common opponent. Norton did lose to Phillipsburg. Beloit beat Phillipsburg at 32, but don't get caught up in that because that was way back in early January when Norton lost to Phillipsburg. Norton started the year 7-6. They've won 7 of the last 8. In the last two games, they have played very well. They beat Hill City, ranked 9th in 2A, by 16, and then they were able to knock off Smoky Valley on Tuesday by 10. Smoky Valley is a solid team, 43-33. And here's why you can't get caught up in common opponents and comparative scores. Another reason why you can't is that Norton has a kid that didn't play until February. It's 6'4" and is a wide body, and Sean Anderson. So that helps their team. So if you're like, well, they lost to Phillipsburg back in January. Yeah, but they didn't have that kid. So this is an interesting matchup. Norton will be very methodical, especially if they get the lead. They mix it up. They'll play man-to-man, 1-3-1, 2-3 zone. They're not a great outside shooting team, but they have had their moments where they have shot it well, like they did against Hill City. They are not a team that really pressures overly too much. They don't take a lot of chances. They're very methodical. And so that's going to require some patience probably tonight for Beloit. Ryan Eilert, head coach, on the matchup against Norton, who comes in at 14-7, Beloit 16-5. And last time they met in the sub-state semifinals, it was a classic in Beloit back in March in 2020, tied at 64-all, when Vinny Pollan had a three-point play with 7 seconds to go. Beloit went on to go to the state tournament, made it to the semis, and of course, it ended because of COVID. That was the last time they met. Here's Coach Eilert on the matchup with the Norton Blue Jays.
They're a very disciplined team. They don't rush things. They make sure they get what they want. The Jones kids are very capable of having a good night and going for over 20, and they're well-balanced, too. They shoot the three well. They've got a couple inside kids that are able to bang in there. And, you know, for us, you know, we're going to have to make sure that we're disciplined, that we're not rushing shots, and at the same time, on the defensive end, we're active and not allowing them to catch and shoot in rhythm. And it'll be a good challenge for us.
Well, sub-state semifinals, Bill Self has said this before. He says the Elite Eight game is the hardest game. You're like, what do you mean? You go to the Final Four, you still got two. No. The most pressure-filled game to him is the Elite Eight, because you get so close, and the ultimate destination is the Final Four. And then you play a little looser when you get to the Final Four, and we've seen that with KU. And I there's so many times since I've covered Beloit over the last 16 years where Beloit's had more of a problem in the sub-state semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had some unbelievable comebacks and wins in the sub-state semifinals. They've been the state a few times where they shouldn't even made the sub-state final. I mean, I can think of one against Lions down in Hoisington where they had no business winning that game. They came back against St. Mary's sub-state semifinals.
For some reason, that was coming to my mind.
Right. And they pulled that one out and then won fairly easily the next night in the sub-state final. Mm-hmm. They barely beat Norton, as I said the last time, on a three-point play by Vinny Pollan, 67-64. That was on Beloit's home floor 3 years ago. And Beloit then turned around and beat TMP by 22. So maybe the sub-state semifinal is the equivalent of Bill Self saying the Elite Eight is the toughest game, because then when you get to the sub-state final, you don't relax, but you kind of feel like, okay, we've got this far. And some people could argue the sub-state final game is the toughest game. But when it comes to Beloit and their history, you really have to say the sub-state semifinal is the bigger of the two from the standpoint of they've had some classics during this round. Now, of course, I think Southeast Lean's a better team than Norton, so if Beloit would play Southeast, it will be a tougher matchup in the sub-state final. But it is interesting. There's been some years where Beloit's went all the way to be state runner-up. They should have never got a sub-state semifinals, but they found a way. And we talk about it all the time, NCAA tournament as well. Sometimes state tournament basketball teams that win championships, you have to avoid a scare. You have to come through in a tight one. And sometimes teams don't. Sometimes teams do. So this can be a very interesting matchup tonight between Beloit and Norton. And Beloit can't be looking ahead to, we want to play Southeast a third time. And because Norton's capable of knocking them off. And last year, Beloit was thinking Southeast a little bit, maybe meet them a third time. And Council Grove beat Beloit. It was a low-scoring game. Council Grove, a methodical team offensively. Norton's a little bit like that. So I think Beloit's team this year is better offensively and better balanced than last year. But once again, it's all about matchups. Don't get caught up in the comparative score. So it should be a good one tonight. 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:50, Norton versus Beloit. The winner of that game will play for the 3A Boys Substate Final tomorrow night in Russell at 7 o'clock against either Southeast Saline or Russell. That's the matchup at 7:30 tonight. So if Beloit would win tonight, we will have their Substate Final tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock on KD Country 94 and the live video stream as well. And then tonight, as we said, once the Norton-Beloit broadcast is in the books, we will throw it to Jason over in Tescott, as it will be St. John's Tipton versus Thunder Ridge. Dusty, there's certainly a history here between these two teams and a pretty good matchup they had earlier in the year.
Yeah, it's obviously always a tough matchup for each one of these teams, and Thunder Ridge is a team that really improved this season. They're coming in at 16-6. St. John's Tipton is 17-5. The difference in seeding at Substate was a win for St. John's Tipton over Thunder Ridge, 57-50 on January 31st. First there in Beloit. So you can expect a physical Thunder Ridge team. I know that St. John's Tipton's going to want to try to get out and run with them and maybe take the advantage in that athletic area that they may have. This is a matchup I guarantee that is going to depend on how the officials call it. We'll just put it that way tonight. So again, for Thunder Ridge, they lost the game to St. John's Tipton and Devon Branch, their head coach, on some of the things he wants to see them do better this time around.
One thing that we have to do is not go 5-for-25 in free throws. So if we make 10 more free throws, we win the game. But my gosh, I'm just slowing down, taking care of the ball, and that's all really. Just like I'm telling my team now, no team wants to play defense for more than 30 seconds. They get bored. So we just got to move the ball, take great shots, and just keep being physical like we always been. Crash the boards, grab defensive rebounds, and just run. But my biggest thing is we have to make free throws because that killed us in that game.
5-of-25? And they lost by only 7?
Yeah.
Dear Lord. No, yeah, if you just shoot 50%, it goes to overtime. Wow. Wow, yeah, that's one of those where you do feel like you lost the game.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of the other team beating you.
Like, that's one of those games, like, it's too late in the season to say it's like the football thing where they made a deep playoff run, obviously, and it's like the first game of the season, and you shoot 5-or-25 free throws. It was too late in the season for that, but man, oh man. Yeah, I heard that number, and I was kind of like you. Your eyes bulge out a little bit, and but yeah, that's definitely in a one game situation. That's definitely a part of it. You know, an elimination game, free throws. Which team shoots 10-15% better?
I'd be willing to bet they shoot better in 5-or-25.
Yeah, I think they will. Yeah, I would predict that for sure.
Yeah. All right. The other side of it?
Yeah, Lance Bergman on the St. John's Tipton bench. He gave some keys to what he needs to see from his group tonight against the physical Longhorns.
We're going to have to take care of the basketball against their zone. I've heard they've, you know, tried some other things, just throw teams off, to make that zone a little more effective. We're going to have to rebound. We're going to have to try to keep the ball outside, out of the inside as much as possible and be strong. So those are things we know we got to work on. We've continued to try to focus on them in practice, and we know that that they're stronger than us. It's no secret.
Yeah, so St. John's Tipton, Coach Lance Bergman there on the matchup this evening. Going to be about a 7:30 tip-off here tonight, and again, we'll join Jason after Wade's finished up there in Russell in 3A.
All right, so once again, we've got Osborne, Blue Valley, Randolph Boys, 5:50 pregame tonight on Z96.3 Lake, followed by Lakeside versus Clifton Clyde from Washington County. Dusty with that doubleheader tonight on Z96.3 Lake and KDCountry94.com. Make sure you get the free KDCountry94 and Z96.3 Lake apps on your smartphone. Download them. They're free. You can listen wherever you may be. I was listening via the app last night. And then, of course, Norton Beloit at 5:50 pregame on KD Country 94 and a live video stream at NCKSports.com, the Beloit Children's Channel, followed by St. John's Tipton and Thunder Ridge on KD Country 94 at approximately 7:30 as well. Tomorrow, we do know our first set of games, the Girls Championships. We have Osborne versus Frankfort on Z96.3 Lake tomorrow at 5:20. Remember that they've changed this up the last few years. Girls Substate Final this year is at 5:30. The boys at 7. They've gone to where they alternate it, to where there's some years the girls get the late start for the Substate Finals. But this year, the classes we're covering, girls got the early game at 5:30 tomorrow night for the Substate Final. Osborne Frankfort, pregame around 5:20 on Z96.3, the Lake. St. John's Tipton Thunder Ridge, all NPL Substate Final. Winner moves on to state. That'll be 5:20. Jason, I'll have the call from Tescott on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. And then if Beloit wins, then we'll have them him tomorrow night on the boys' side at 6:50 on KD Country 94 or after the broadcast of St. John's Tipton Thunder Ridge. And if the Osborne boys win, we'll have them on. And if one of those teams loses, then we'll have St. John's Tipton boys on. So that's just the pecking order of how it goes. If you don't like it, too bad. And if you and hopefully you appreciate the coverage we do. There's we only have two stations, and we have a few. We have more than two teams, so we have to do what's best for what we do here. And so that's what we'll do, and we'll see how it all works out tonight. So that will be tomorrow. We also have KU Texas on Z96.3 tomorrow as well at 2:30 with the pregame show. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I do want to mention the Smith Center girls are in action tonight in 2A in the semifinals. Right. They take on TMP Marion there in Ellis. That'll be the first game, and then following that, Terrigal plays Hoxie. So those are the semifinal matchups, 2A at Ellis, and then 1A Division 1 from the area. Sylvan Lucas boys against Canton Galva in the semis in Gossel at 6 o'clock. Full brackets and schedules for sub-state basketball at nckssports.com.
And if our area teams make it to state, we'll do our best to cover as many or if not all of the teams that make it to state coming up next week at the various sites across the state of Kansas as well. College hoops last night. Number one, Houston knocked off the Shockers. It was 33-31 at halftime. Shockers were in it. And then Craig Porter Jr. got his fourth foul early in the second half. That changed everything. And the game turned on a dime. Houston ended up cruising to the victory 83-66. Shockers 15-14 overall, 8-9 in the AAC. It was the first time the Shockers played a number one team during the regular season in college basketball since 1967 when a guy named Lou Alcindor played.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Wasn't even his name anymore.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Number 11, K-State's on the road coming up tomorrow at West Virginia at 1 o'clock on ESPN+ to wrap up their regular season. K-State has an opportunity to get the number 2 seed at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City next week. The Wildcats are 23-7 in a three-way tie for second place in the conference at 11-6. The Mountaineers are 17-13, 6-11 in the Big 12, and definitely need a win to maybe solidify their shot at being in the NCAA tournament. Jerome Tang on the focus for his team against West Virginia coming up tomorrow afternoon.
I don't think they're tired of winning, and I don't think they're tired of getting better, but I mean, West Virginia, you know, it's their senior night, and they are going to be locked in, and their fans are going to be rocking and rolling. And Keedy Johnson's been there, you know, for 4 years. He's a real senior. And Emmett Matthews, you know, he was there before, so he spent 3 years there. They got some people invested there, right? And their fans support him. And so we're going to have to be even more focused, and we have to go win the game because they're not going to give it to us.
No, that is absolutely true. I think he's on point there. And KU tomorrow is in action. What a luxury it is to know you've wrapped up the Big 12 championship and don't have to win tomorrow in Austin against Texas. The third-ranked Jayhawks outright Big 12 champs. They'll be the number one seed in next week's Big 12 tournament. Looks like they're a lock for number one seed for the NCAA tournament. So the question becomes, all right, despite having the title wrapped up, Coach Self, what do you do? Do you rest your starters? How do you approach this game? How important is it tomorrow in Austin?
This is a huge game. There's a lot of things to play for. There's seeding. Certainly can't affect our Big 12 tournament, but if you have that attitude, I think that you're minimizing what's most important. You know, it's not like an NBA playoff where you already know who you're going to play and it's going to be a best of seven and you want everybody fresh. We're still playing to put us in the best and most favorable position come tournament time. So as long as we're playing, we're going to try to win.
I love that. I mean, KU's got 15 quad one wins. They could get a 16th tomorrow. If they win tomorrow, and as long as they don't get upset in the quarterfinals Big 12 tournament, I think you could argue they should be the number one overall seed based on their body of work.
I don't know how they're not. Like, Houston's number one in the country right now. I get it, but they're not going to have
the Alabama's the one I think people think
And so Alabama would be one that you could be like, well, you know, if you compare some of the things that happened in their seasons and KU swept Oklahoma and Oklahoma killed Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of just look at some of those things, and the quad one wins obviously are in favor of KU probably against anybody in the country right now. I'm pretty sure, like by a lot, if I remember what
I saw. It's not even close.
It's like half, like the next one has half of what KU has is what I saw. That was a week ago, but you know, it's like they're making a really good case. Yeah, if they would lose, maybe if they would lose in the quarters of the Big 12 tournament, they won't get it. But I think they could even lose that possibly and get number one overall. I don't think their chances are anywhere near as good, but if they get to the semifinals, at least to the tournament, I don't see where they're not the number one overall seed.
Which means they still have something to play for.
Absolutely.
Because tomorrow, you know, Joe Lunardi says that they have a number one seed wrapped up in the tournament, over not the number one overall, but a one seed.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with
him.
I don't know. I don't know how you win the Big 12 outright, the best conference in America by far, according to everybody, and not be a number one seed. So I think Kansas, no matter what happens, they could lose to Texas and lose in the quarterfinals, and they'll still be a one seed. But what they do have to play for is if they get the number one overall seed, then they pick their path. And the path would be Des Moines and then Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing to me because it's just kind of in a rotation. But the last few times Kansas has been in Kansas City, it's amazing to me how quickly KU fans and the media in general just flat out forget things. It's like they have amnesia. Like, people just automatically think Kansas wins if they're in Kansas City. The last few times Kansas has been in Kansas City, they have not. I remember Elite Eight game against Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
They did not win that game. Devontae Graham went 0 for 10 from 3. Josh Jackson, early foul trouble. They were in Kansas City back in the 90s against Virginia, and they were supposed to win, and they did not win. There's one other time they were in Kansas City, I'm going blank right now, where they didn't win. Now, I think people are all stuck on the 1988. Oh, they won it all in KC. Well, dear Lord, that was 35 years ago. So just because Kansas picks their path and goes Des Moines and in Kansas City doesn't mean they're going to the Final Four this year. And I personally am not as overly worried about the number one overall seed at all. I know KU wants it. I know their fan base wants it because travel would be more conducive to, you know, just drive on up to Des Moines and then right there in Kansas City. I get that part. But Kansas has been able to win years where they've gone to different sites, different places. You know, you like to stay in the Midwest somehow. But they do have something to play for. I saw Scott Pollard, former Jayhawk, say, "Coach Self, I'd love for him to just go ahead and rest all the starters tomorrow." Well, Bill Self's not that type of guy, and like he just explained it very, very well. That, well, if you knew exactly who you're going to play, and it's a best of five, best of seven series, yeah, you probably are going to rest some people. But we still have something to play for, and that is a number one overall seed. To me, that's all there is to play for, but that's pretty important to Bill Self and the Jayhawks and to their fan base. I think that it's just like the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs didn't need home field advantage to make the Super Bowl. I still don't believe they have to have home field advantage. And media and Chiefs fans just immediately forget that they had lost two of the previous four at home at Arrowhead. We have to have home field advantage. No, I don't think you do, but it's nice to have. Don't get me wrong. So certainly something to play for you tomorrow against Texas. 3 o'clock is the tip-off and pregame at 2:30. Iowa State's at number 7, Baylor, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Number 22, TCU's at Oklahoma at 2 o'clock. Texas Tech hosts Oklahoma State at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, looking forward to all that. Hopefully K-State can get a win and put themselves in the number 2 spot.
Yeah, and then you'd have possibly a KU, K-State, Big 12
Another day where I'm not cheering for KU.
Right.
But I want them to win.
Okay. All right.
Just to help the standings.
Yes, right.
Sometimes those things that Kansas has to play for, the things that they have to play for, it's not so much for Kansas, but it's like kind of a roadblock, mental roadblock for the teams that they're going to be facing later on. Like, oh no, the number one overall seed, we got in that bracket. Oh man. And or they're going to Kansas City. Oh, there's no way we can beat Kansas. And, you know.
But see, I don't think, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but I take the flip side of that. I take that all the pressure in the world is on the number one overall
on
seed,
back,
and you've got nothing to lose.
Champs, right? Like,
right.
Even if you got a different team,
yes.
you're still recognized as the last team that won this tournament, and now you've got the number one overall seed in the next tournament.
Listen,
right after you won the championship.
Kansas was number one overall seed when they lost to Northern Iowa in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And Northern Iowa played loose as a goose, had nothing to lose, and they jumped on Kansas, and Kansas played from behind the entire time. I've seen Kansas many, many times over the last 25 years, 30 years, have a great seed, and they get a little tight. They get behind early, or they miss some shots. The other team gains confidence. The other team's playing loose as a goose. They got guys that make threes that you're not expecting to make threes. And the next thing you know, you have a dogfight. So I understand where you're coming from, but
yeah,
I
there's
think
an intimidation factor
if you're Allen Fieldhouse
teams, right?
Yeah,
like, but
right.
Not like if you've made the tournament, you know you deserve to be here, especially after that first round.
Yeah, I think there's intimidation for, you know, if I'm trying to come up with a good one here, like Appalachian State. Okay, there's intimidation. Playing KU or Kentucky, yeah. there's intimidation. But the second round, odds are you're going to play somebody with like the likes of possibly a Michigan or possibly a Michigan State. Or those teams aren't going to be intimidated by Kansas. Yeah. No Power 5 team's going to really be intimidated by Kansas.
And, you know, with the Big East, it's six, you know, now that the
Creighton's not intimidated by Creighton intimidated by Kansas last year?
No, not at all.
No.
But yeah,
I think the little guys are though.
Yeah, that's where it comes into play is that first 16 seed you're going to see, and it's like, oh boy.
Yeah.
This is the overall number one, and they're the defending national champs. This is not the draw I wanted.
Right. Yeah, right. Now, I think if you played the games at Allen Fieldhouse, that makes it more intimidating for teams, no question. But Kansas City, I don't think there's an intimidation factor there for KU, personally. Just nice to have basically a home game, but
yeah,
it's still not your home game.
Yeah, the crowd will be behind them heavy, but it's still...
But they can be heavy in favor of them in Des Moines, too.
Yeah, you got to go play the game, right?
Absolutely. Break up the Royals. They beat the Angels 8-4 yesterday. Royals are 6-1. Salvi had a stolen base yesterday. And so they're taking on the A's this afternoon. So Royals playing some good baseball in spring training. Not that it means a lot, but it's, you know, it's good to see the new staff and they're putting together some wins and maybe some confidence. And if they get better pitching, the Royals could be a team to certainly, you know, maybe they could be in the wild card race come trade deadline. Who knows? I mean, things have happened before, but it's early, but the early returns are somewhat promising, and they're having fun, and they seem to be actually moving on to the 21st century of actually dealing with things when it comes to pitching and so forth, and the previous regime was a little outdated, to say the least. I think it's a good thing there. Hey, Brian Haney's coming up here in about 5 minutes or so. A couple things I wanted to ask you guys. One, Big 12 Coach of the Year in men's basketball, I think most people would agree it will be Jerome Tang. I think most people would agree it should be Jerome Tang. However, I will say this. I'm not saying that this is it should be different, but Bill Self should be right there.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I think K-State's as athletic as KU. I see K-State fans come back. Well, yeah, but KU they can't give it to Self because he's got All Americans. Keontae Johnson's All American. He's a high school McDonald's All American. So you lose two first round draft picks. You lose David McCormick. You have to count on a freshman from Wichita to have a heavy load. You got to play a 6'7" guy at the five spot who was playing with the guards during the offseason, think he's going to play more of a guard spot. I mean, he doesn't have a deep bench. He really doesn't.
No.
And all he did was win the toughest conference in America by possibly two games outright if they win tomorrow. So I think Jerome Tang's going to win the Coach of the Year award. And I'm not saying he shouldn't. I absolutely think he probably should. Because here's how you win the Coach of the Year awards. You know this as well as anybody. If you have low expectations and blow those expectations away, mm-hmm. you're probably automatically going to be at the top of the list. Whereas KU is always expected to be near the top. And it's like Andy Reid. Andy Reid wasn't even considered a finalist for Coach of the Year.
Right.
He lost Tyreek Hill, and all these people said they were going to have all kinds of problems and not win their division. Andy Reid wasn't even a finalist for Coach of the Year. All he did was lose Tyreek Hill. They retooled, and he won 14 games and won supposedly the toughest division in football before it began. Andy Reid wasn't even a finalist. Brett Veach was not finalist for Executive of the Year. Why isn't Bill Self considered a finalist for Coach of the Year? He should be every year, the way he does things. But considering all the talent that he lost, and yes, he has talent to work with, of course, I get that. But Jerome Tang has some pretty good talent, too. Let's not sit here and act like he doesn't. And that's part of the job, right? The part of the job is to recruit players to play for you. And Jerome Tang obviously is recruited better than Bruce Weber. And he got to keep Noel. He brought in Tomlin, very athletic. He's got Johnson. He brought in a transfer. Desi Sills is a really good player. I mean, he made the team better before they even stepped on the floor because of recruiting. And that's what Bill Self does every year when he just changes over and retools. But because your expectations were low, Jerome Tang's going to win Coach of the Year. And I'm not saying he shouldn't. I'm just saying I think it really, when you look at him, it should be closer than people think is what I'm trying to say. I definitely think Tang will win it. I think he deserves it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he doesn't. But I do think Bill Self is just taken for granted, just like Andy Reid is with the Chiefs. Well, it's
every person like that.
Well, it's like LeBron and Jordan win an MVP. Well, then give it to somebody else because, well, he's supposed to. And some guy, the year before averaged 18 a game, takes the world by storm and averages 30, and his team goes up to second seed in the playoff standings. Well, we've got to give the MVP to that guy. Or Russell Westbrook has to have the MVP. LeBron was the best player. Everybody knows it. But we got to give it to Russell Westbrook because he averaged a triple-double.
Yeah, no matter what, I mean, Bill Self is going to be at the top of this conference, and so that's the tough part of it.
Is it harder to get there, or is it harder to stay there?
And I believe it's harder to stay there.
I do too.
Getting there is not easy with a group that you have to get to play together.
Yes.
Like, it's not just about going and getting 12 new dudes, right?
No.
It's about getting them to have chemistry and play together, and guys that have never played with each other before, and having one guy, and I'm not saying like he had one guy back that did anything for K-State last year. Ish Masood's back, but he wasn't really anything last year for K-State. And so and I'm not saying that because I want those other guys back. I'm saying that because everybody had to learn how to play together, and it happened so fast, and they jumped out so hot that they got confidence right away and then built it into the conference season. And your pick to finish last, and rightfully so, nobody knew what they were going to be. And he pushes himself up. I actually had this discussion brought up the other day, and I had somebody, a KU fan, actually tell me that Rodney Terry should get some consideration.
I agree.
And I told him, I was like, I 100% agree with you. I think it's Self, Tang, and Terry are the three guys that you're looking at right now. I just don't think they're going to be giving Coach of the Year to an interim guy.
Yeah.
Right? The great job that he had to do and stepping into the fire after what happened with Chris Beard and just having to take it over and to take that team until the last week of the season, still a chance to win a Big 12 championship.
They're ranked ninth in the country.
Yeah, and it's like he definitely should get some consideration. I don't think anybody's talking about him.
I agree with you.
And Bill Self, obviously they're talking about, they talk about him every year. Tang had the big thing because he's picked last, right, and comes up. But Texas was picked to finish high, but they don't have their coach anymore.
Yeah.
So he had to come in and do all that, and he should definitely get some consideration too, I think. But I think Tang's got it in the bag, to
I
be
do
completely
too.
Honest with you.
I do
these people do need to be in the conversation.
Yeah, and one more thing about KU is Bill Self could have went out and he could have got a guy that averaged 25 a game in high school coming in, or he could have got a transfer averaging 22 a game from some mid-major possibly. He knew what he needed. He got Kevin McCullough. He knew he was a missing piece, and that helps him win Big 12 title. He knows these guys are going to work well together, or thinks they do, and he finds the right pieces. And he molds them just like Jerome Tang molded his team. And all three should be seriously considered. But, yes, I agree Tang will get it, and I have no problem with him getting it. I just think it might be a little bit closer. And people, they just automatically just take – we take Andy Reid for granted. We take Michael Jordan, LeBron James for granted. We take Patrick Mahomes for granted. That's what's going to happen here soon. Well, he can't win. And right now, Nikola Jokic of the Nuggets, everybody's trying to bag on him that he can't win a third straight MVP. He's having just as good a year as he won the last 2 years. The Nuggets have the best record in the West. They finally got a title contender legitimately, and now people want to knock Jokic because they don't want to give it to him 3 years in a row. He should be the MVP this year as well, but that's people just all of a sudden get bored because Bill Self always is good. We get bored with Bill Self outside of Kansas, and even KU fans sometimes get bored with it. Like, we just take it for granted. Chiefs fans, we said it, oh my God, they won the second Super Bowl. Yeah, that was nice and all, but it wasn't like the first one because, we almost kind of expected us to win more Super Bowls and things like that. One more quick question. Real quick. Big 12 basketball player of the year should be? I think it's a two-man race myself. I think it's Marquise Noel and Jalen Wilson.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing somebody in the Big 12. Keontae George is having a pretty good year for me.
Yeah, George.
Yeah, but who do you think should be? I'm sure we'll be biased on this one, but who do you think should be the Big 12 player of the year? I think it's tough because Wilson's kind of went back, not backwards, but he's been quiet there about a week or two offensively, but then Noel had a rash of turnovers and didn't play well during their losing streak. I think this is very very congested in regards to figuring out who is the Big 12 player of the year.
I'd give it to Wilson.
I think Wilson's going to get it because they won the Big 12.
Yeah. I think he should, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Even though it seems kind of crazy for me to say that, but I've seen a lot of games where Marquise Noel did not look great this year.
Yeah. Well, Jalen Wilson had 2 points in one, another five in another, but it isn't always about
I don't see him as
it's not always about scoring either. It isn't about scoring either all the time.